want to welcome everybody, including our guests from the media, to the first ever Public Integrity Summit. We intend for this to be a regular occasion where we bring together some of the most important people, as far as I'm concerned, anywhere in public service in the state of Indiana. Those people who, on behalf of their fellow citizens and taxpayers, work every day to make sure that laws are being abided by, high standards are being lived up to, and that any misdeeds or fraud or even inefficiency in waste is being identified and rectified. We value what people in this room do as much as anything done anywhere in the world of public service in Indiana. And I always have the same feeling when I visit with you individually, and especially when I see this, we see you all brought together in this way. First of all, thank you immeasurably for the all-important work you do. And secondly, I look forward to the day when we'll need fewer of you in these jobs, because compliance with high standards of behavior is the norm in state government. It is, of course, the norm today, but we want to see it be universally applied a norm. And by the work you do every day, I think you bring us closer to that objective. I'll be visiting with this group after the media leaves, and I'll say at greater length how appreciative your fellow citizens are. I want to listen to you talk about this year in which we've tried to strengthen this apparatus in each relevant department, bring it together, bring you together so you can learn from each other and work more closely together. Many of the cases that you have developed do cross lines, and certainly I know many of the techniques you use and practices that you employ are common, and you may have a lot to learn from each other. But the first purpose of the day is just to recognize you and the job you do. There's been a tremendous increase in the follow-up on tips, on the number of tips. Now that people feel they have a place that welcomes whistleblowing and suggestions for improvement. And you folks are doing a tremendous job of ensuring that people get a respectful ear, and if they have a valid point, if their facts are right, that somebody will act on it and have a look at it, and if necessary, prosecute it. So on behalf of your fellow taxpayers and the rest of the folks in state government, that vast, vast majority that does it right all day, every day, thank you profoundly. More on that later. It's very difficult in a room full of people who are doing such important and noble work to single out anyone. But I hope you'll permit us to do so today. In the case of two very, very special people, to show how grateful the citizens of Indiana are for fraud fighters. First, I'd like to ask Jerry Grant to come forward. Jerry Grant has had a more than a three-decade-long career of service to the people of Indiana, and it is reading his record, it is full of important achievements at NDOT and elsewhere to try to see that the citizens of this state are well served and that their tax dollars are carefully spent. He'll be retiring soon after that illustrious career, but your long and proud tenure alone, Jerry, isn't reason for the recognition I want to give you now. Here in his last year of service, he completed some very important work that identified flaws and excesses in the change order process at NDOT, and also helped develop some new guidelines for better control of this occasionally wasteful or even fraudulent practice in the future. And I don't doubt that your work, Jerry, is going to save this year, next year, every year going forward, literally millions of dollars that can then be, will pave more roads We'll build an extra bridge or two, and they ought to name it after you somewhere because of the savings you've made possible. And we have an award for meritorious service that I am happy to confer on you today. I know you're going to say that others deserve it more, and I know you're going to say that everybody here deserves one, and maybe one day everybody here will get one. But I hope you all will join me in recognizing this good man for the work he's done for us all for so long, especially his success in this last year, which we're going to, as taxpayers, are going to receive the benefit of for many years to come. Jerry, thank you very much. Dave Clark, I worked with him a lot. Al Marshall from the State Board of Accounts. Katie, I worked with her. She worked at NDOT for a while. I appreciate everybody, Troy Stanton, Becker, Al McElroy. These guys, we've worked together. I've been in this job 19 years, 19 and a half maybe, and I appreciate the... Well, this one's mine. Thank you. I appreciate it, Governor.
Absolutely. Thanks, Troy.
Thank you.
Years of great service.
I'd like to ask Chris Stanton to come forward, please. Again, to me, everybody in this room is a star. If we tried to identify a superstar fraud fighter for this year, I think it'd be Chris Stanton. Chris, you've been involved in multiple cases. You've identified, you've helped to develop cases in which people, please step in here while I'm bragging on you. We're misusing funds in the IMPACT program that were meant for to serve unemployed workers or people between jobs. You've helped identify people who were stealing money meant for poor people. These are the kind of offenses that are just, we cannot tolerate in our state. We don't have the money we'd like to have to help less fortunate Hoosiers, and it's simply not acceptable for any one of those dollars to be spent ineffectively, let alone taken for personal use. And once again, I know that you're going to want to share this credit with all kinds of folks. I know none of these cases that you've had a hand in was your work alone. But Chris, as we surveyed the great strides that are being made in bringing cleaner government to Indiana, we just saw your hand in it over and over again, and we're proud of you. And just as with Jerry, I hope you'll accept a meritorious service award.
Thank you.
And with thanks for all you've done to make Indiana government better this year.
Thank you very much, sir.
Our chief, Harry Grinnell, was not able to be here today. He had an automobile accident last week, and so he's been ordered home by the doctor. But in Harry's place, I'd like to say it's a privilege to work for the state of Indiana and a privilege to work with the investigators in our compliance division. They're some of the highest quality investigators I think the state has. And I'd like to just say thank you to the investigators in our division for all the hard work that you guys have done. We appreciate you.
Good work, Chris.
Thank you.
We have one further order of business, then we'll take some questions, and then we'll get the meeting started. But Mary Lee Comer from the Ethics Commission has joined us. During this year, first through executive order and then codified by action of the Indiana General Assembly, we put in place some new and in most cases and in all cases tougher standards that we want Indiana State government to live up to. And Mary Lee Comer has pulled together at the Ethics Commission in one place now a document that I hope is user-friendly and clear and a good reference for our fellow employees who will always have overwhelmingly want to do the right thing always. And so we're making that official today. Thank you for that effort and for the new tool, which I know is going to be very useful to us all. Well, thank you, too, for your excellent service. There's been an enormous increase in workload at your commission, but you folks seem to be handling it very, very well and efficiently, and we're appreciative of that, and I look for you to continue that in the year ahead.
Thank you, sir.
So now we'll use this opportunity to take questions on that or any subject and get back to work.
What's the point of today's conference?
First of all, to recognize fraud fighters and those who are looking to make sure that tax dollars in Indiana are spent well. We've strengthened this capacity significantly. The biggest change, of course, being the creation of Inspector General's Office, which is a place for whistleblowers to go. It is a place for those who identify problems to take them and actually have them acted on. There's been a dramatic increase in the number of cases actually taken forward. You know, I always make the point, we take no satisfaction from the prosecution of public wrongdoing. We look forward to the day when there are no cases to take anywhere. But until men are angels and until that day arrives, the work of people in this room is absolutely essential. It is wrong for a single tax dollar to be spent to less than maximum effect when we have so many services we need to provide. And it is certainly wrong for a single tax dollar to be taken for personal advantage. It doesn't happen very often, but we need to make sure if we can that it happens as rarely as possible. And so we have brought these folks together for the first time, first to say thanks, secondly to foster an exchange across the departments that may lead to the good work they do now getting better and better.
Democrats say many of these cases like Caraway and Nichols are political witch hunts. What do you say to them?
I'm sorry, but wrongdoing is wrongdoing. And again, we take no satisfaction. Our real objective is not to look to the past, but to the present and the future, and to we know that in an enterprise as large as Indiana State government, there will probably always be those who want to bend the rules or put themselves ahead of the public interest. And our real goal is to, during our time of responsibility, to make government here as clean and as efficient as it can be.
Governor, how many man hours are being used to focus on fraud and misuse?
I don't know. I would just say that every one of them is well spent. The activity of the people in this room pays a very large dividend, first of all, directly, in terms of dollars saved, and I think indirectly and invisibly through the deterrence of fraud or waste. So most of this work was going on anyway, but we think now it's being done more aggressively. There's a follow-through mechanism that wasn't there before. I've heard from many of the folks in this room that they worked hard in the past to develop cases that then were not taken forward. And that was a very sad waste of some talent and some time and money.
Governor, some local officials within Edwards County sent me a letter yesterday asking for an executive order with some specific changes to mobile phone safety.
Mm-hmm.
Issue that executive order?
I will look at it. Haven't seen it yet, but we'll read it carefully. We said during the time of the tornadoes that the first job was rescue, recovery, rebuilding, but that we would look to see if there were lessons that could be learned about any aspect of our preparedness. And I'll absolutely have a look at this, see if it seems likely to improve safety in a reasonable way.
Governor, in a letter to the Secretary of Transportation, you said that the majority of Indiana favors the eastern time zone. Would you either support or oppose a statewide referendum to find out if that's the case?
I think it's a bad idea. I think this process has come to the best end it could, and we'd be ought to put it behind us and turn on to other subjects. I don't think it would add anything. The legislation, not that I proposed, but the way the legislature passed it, called on every county in the state to look and see if it wanted to make a change. The vast majority didn't, and I don't think you'd get any different answer if you asked the question again.
That legislation, which you often find in the law, requires the state to support any county executive that sought a change, and yet your letter specifically goes against St. Joseph County's request. Do you feel like you're violating that law?
I don't. Our reading is that certainly allowed to examine other competing considerations, like not fracturing a region, which is obviously one social and economic zone. I also feel like that position reflects the overwhelming sentiment of people in all counties up there that the top priority is to keep them together as they have been in the past.
Does the Department of Transportation indicate to you that they're going to follow your recommendation?
No.
Because you said that it's kind of, the process has come to the best end it could. I mean, you don't know what they're going to do.
By that, I simply mean it's taken the steps that I always thought were important. I have no indication what the decision's going to be.
I said
with complete consistency for 2 years, we had the first objective was daylight savings time, get in step with the world economy in the interest of Indiana workers. But the other objective, if we could secure that, was to have as much of Indiana as possible on the same time zone. I made the lame joke 1,000 times. It could be Hawaiian time for all I cared if we could get more of us together. I think when this is over, it's likely there'll be more of us together, not 100%. And 100% in the case of our state is simply not attainable.
How would there be more of us together? Because the way I read it will be, if they follow the your recommendations, it'd be 17 counties instead of 10 on central time.
We had about 77 or 78% on Indiana time before, some on central time, some on eastern time. That percentage, 77 or 8, will go up to about 81 on the proposal that I made. And I wish it could be more, but I think that's probably as far as we can get practically.
Have they given you any indication on when the decision might come out?
No.
Are you adamantly opposed to the gaming machines and taverns and considering the potential income of the state?
First of all, I'm not interested in the income. If there's a reason to do this, it shouldn't be that the state or four localities can get their hands on more money. I'm utterly uninterested in that question. I'm not adamantly opposed to a situation that right now has some real anomalies in it. All I was opposed to was ignoring a law in the books that I took an oath to uphold. So for the moment, we are enforcing that law where there's a complaint, where there's a flagrant violation. I think that it is a reality that this gambling is going on now in a Wild West, unregulated and very widespread fashion. And if somebody proposes a way to limit it, maybe reduce it and regulate it, I'd give it a look. But it has nothing to do, in my mind, with money. That would be a side effect.
Governor, what's your reaction to Judge Hamilton's decision on prayer in Indian House?
I just think it's regrettable. But it's in a long line now of I think, confusing and sometimes clumsy attempts by the courts to insert themselves into this issue. And I personally believe that and practice that when prayer is offered, which I think is very often appropriate in a country founded on religious principles, that it be inclusive and recognize that there may be people of various faiths present. But not everything that ought to be should be dictated by a court, and I think when courts do that, they sometimes create divisions in a state that needs to be unified and working on very large problems, so to work on very large problems that occupy us all.
Have you read the opinion, Governor?
Only a summary of it. It's 60 pages long and I was traveling. But I think I understand what the judge was saying.
The lawmakers are recommending that the order be 5. Would you have any feelings about that?
I'm going to leave to the legislature what they ought to do, but I never recommend anybody defiance of law as it stands.
You said the prayer should be inclusive and recognize that there are various faiths in there. Do you think prayers offered in Jesus' name are inclusive?
I'll just say that when we host an event, we do offer people, we do ask people to try to remember the need to be inclusive and to recognize that this is a diverse state. My impression is that the General Assembly has tried to do that too, and I'm not sure that it's a good outcome for a court to be issuing orders here in a situation that might have been better resolved through private and voluntary agreement.
You said throughout this year, Governor, that you want to drive more resources to the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
As we're getting close now to the OSIT legislative session, what sort of shape will that principle take in your legislative package?
Principally, to provide new tools and authority to local districts to combine for the purposes of reducing overhead and provide more money in the classroom that will do the most good. We have some structures today that allow them to go together to purchase things, for instance, but they're not very well used. There's some question about their authority to go together on certain purchases, and we'd like to clean that up. Now, I don't know any superintendent who wants to spend money on less important things, but so it'll be mainly in a spirit of providing new enabling assistance to help them get together on things as small as materials or as expensive as school buses. In other states, for instance, school buses are all bought off a state contract. In Indiana, as far as I can determine, they are almost always bought individually or by one district at a time. At a cost that is thousands of dollars more than could be available on a volume purchase. It's things like that that could make more money available to keep classes smaller, have new programming, enhance teacher pay, whatever would be most effective at improving results for our kids.
You said at the state fairgrounds this year that if there was money to be saved by not building schools or building less expensive ones, maybe there was a way to transfer that savings into the classroom. Have you found those ways, and will that be in legislation?
There are obviously such ways to make the dollars more flexible between those accounts, and just on the simplest basis, if capital spending, which is 3 times more in Indiana than it is at the national average, if it becomes more moderate, districts can reduce their tax demands for that purpose, and perhaps dollar for dollar, enhance their spending on the things that matter most.
That would require changing the law. Are you going to offer? Are you going to offer a change in the law to allow that?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. And if somebody else has, if the legislation wants to work with us on that, it would be great to get your help.
Have you any thoughts about the president of Indiana University and the complaints from the faculty?
No, I have nothing to add to that. I think it's a matter for the board and the faculty.
Governor Congressman Steve Bouyer has included a provision in the House Budget Reconciliation Bill to exempt mental health drugs from the provision that would allow states to create lists of preferred medications. The National Governors Association said that provision without that exemption would save lots of money for states. So do you support the provision, or do you support Bluyear's exemption?
I really haven't looked at it yet. I think that the you have to be careful to make certain that, particularly in this area, that patient needs come first. We are taking all kinds of steps, I think effective ones, to reduce the runaway increases in Medicaid spending in Indiana. I have hopes that we will have one of the best records in America at beginning to slow down that increase so we can have more dollars available for education and other purposes. But in this particular area, very vulnerable patients, you have to be very careful.
Do you have a personal opinion on ISTEP spring or fall?
Same one I've had for 2 years. I'll be in the spring, and I expect to see it there for much longer.
I have to follow up on the Medicaid thing. Have you heard, when you were out at the Republican Governors Association, did you hear from other governors about this issue, given that Lilly is an Indiana company and needs to work there?
No.
Would you support a license permit or driving permit for undocumented immigrants in the state of Indiana so that they could get insurance and learn the rules of the road and drive, but not use that license for citizenship purposes?
Now, this is a problem we need to address. Every state is wrestling with it, and it needs, I think, to be addressed on multiple fronts. I'm encouraged by the president's recent speech about toughening border security, about separating temporary workers from the path to citizenship. I think we can do those things. We do need to recognize that temporary workers from other countries are a very important part of the Indiana economy right now. There are many enterprises in this state that could not operate without them, and we'd all be poorer if they weren't here. It's going to be a good idea at some point for the safety of all motorists that people have permission to, that we know that people can drive, they pass the test, that they have insurance, that they don't feel obligated to flee the scene of accidents. It's a matter of safety, road safety for us all. But I think it can only go hand in hand with improvements in making sure that the law is not being violated and that people offered that permission are here legally.
Next week, I believe the State Finance Authority is going to vote on how much toll money the RDA should get. Do you support the maximum $10 million, or is there a lesser number that you support?
No, I support that number. I worked hard on the RDA to make the RDA real after decades of people trying, and I want it to be a very strong force for economic growth in Northwest Indiana. Part of our major moves transportation initiative at this General Assembly is the effort to create large new resources without tax increases in the area of transportation. And if we're successful doing that, I think we want to look at even more support for the RDA over time.
Governor, who's going to carry your education initiative that you talked about?
I think we have sponsors available, identified, but I don't want to speak for them quite yet. I think that the people who've been associated with leadership in the education area have indicated certainly agreement with the Dollars to the Classroom initiative, and I think they'll have their sponsorship will be known publicly soon.
Is the legislation written?
It's in process. We've sort of signed off on the most of the details of it. It'll be aimed at the 65% benchmark, which is being adopted now in more and more states. It happens to be the national average by one common definition. In Indiana, we're about 61%. The difference between us and the national average is $400 million. So it's not a bad target to shoot at, but I don't want Indiana only to be average either. So we're working on the details, both of what's an appropriate target, but especially what are the tools we could offer, the help we could offer, so that the schools can start moving toward it.
Governor, the latest numbers for high school dropouts show that they increased last year from the year before, so they're larger. Do you have any ideas on what schools should do to reach the better kids?
Well, it's going to focus the education roundtable and needs to remain. This is our dropout rate, and the first step was to count it fairly and accurately, which we didn't always do. Now, I think the period of denial is over, and a period of, I hope, effective addressing this issue is at hand. I think the steps proposed in the last general assembly had a lot to recommend them, but they probably don't go near far enough. Anything else?
This ends up to establishing an absolute drop dead route for I-69.
Well, Commissioner Sharp is or was here, and best ask him, but I think that the fundamental route was identified last year, and that was an important step forward. I'm talking about in 2004. I know the final, as they, I think, call it, alignment is yet to be decided, but that's a fairly narrow corridor, narrow range of changes. But we got some NDOT folks here who tell you better than I can. Thank you very much.
Thank you.